But I took full responsibility, and I even told myself that I was chosen to go through my addiction.
I'm Flint Anderson, founder of PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need. I've been in recovery since 2001, and there isn't much I don't know about recovery. And my mission is to constantly tell the truth about addiction, to make the realities of addiction, recovery, and drug culture known, and to drive awareness and advocate change that ultimately saves lives.
And I'm Jason LaChance, a certified recovery coach with a passion for speaking with others and sharing their knowledge to help others seek recovery and maintain long-term sobriety. And this is the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, presented by PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need.
Welcoming to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, Richard Gallardo Ozuna. Thank you for joining me and Mr. Flint Anderson, founder of PAIN, riding shotgun.
As always.
Good to talk to another gentleman working that long-term recovery. So we're going to dig in all kinds of areas here.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me, both of you. And,
you bet.
You know, for me to be able to share my story, thanks to Michelle Curiel from the Sobriety Playbook. Without her pointing me into your direction, I wouldn't be here, so thank you. You know, I've been very, very, very fortunate because there were so many people that I've known in the past that didn't make it out,
right,
that didn't make it to the next level in life, or to even have an opportunity to live life to somewhat the fullest or even a partial. And April 10th, 2024 will be 21 years clean and sober.
Congratulations.
And thank you. Thank you. And for me, that to not even think that I was going to make it past 21. I think I had told my mom in my late teens, somewhere between 17 and 19, somewhere around that area, I would always let her know that, you know what, I don't think I'm going to make it. I'm not going to be around that long. For whatever reason, I it was just something that I did mention to her and tell her. So I never expected, or nor did anybody else expect me to live past 21.
Right.
Running into people, you know, in life that you went to school with, and you were in the, you know, they were in the neighborhood, and all of a sudden they see you down the road, and you know.
Yep. I know that.
Richard made it, guys. What? Okay.
Richard, what I love is I went to my 50th reunion this year. All right. So I went in a little late because I was at another function, but I walk in and I look at my wife of 44 years. I look at her and I go, you know what? After all I've been through, I look better than about 90% of the people here tonight.
Yeah. You know, and listen, the way that you put it is that Richard's still here. That wasn't quite the way it was announced. It was like more shit like,
right.
How did you die?
Right.
Okay, yeah. No,
I'm still here.
That was for five
thank
minutes.
You. Yeah, but thank you. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. But, and again, you know, I try to give my sobriety humor in a way where I look sure. back, because I'm constantly sharing on social media my road and the dead ends that I faced, and also the living hell moments, the Bermuda Triangles, if you will, because these were places that I would go into that I could not leave until I was up for a week, week and a half, walking home with nothing.
Right.
Pulling in with everything. And me to do live stream from the streets in the same areas that almost took me. And it was just this, it was this vortex, this suction of an area. Like I said, the Bermuda Triangle, once you get in, you never leave. And once you, if you do leave, you don't leave the same that you came in as. And again, very fortunate that I'm able to, you know, to think, speak, and do what I need to do. But there's been a lot of damage along the way as well, too. You know, it, for me, addiction didn't just happen to where, okay, I use and I love it and I'm going and I'm hooked. No, no, there was a lot of things that came and joined my addiction, and that was from early trauma, early childhood trauma, unchecked trauma. And I never really experienced that type of area of thinking in mental illness, because I was always a happy-go-lucky kid. And I think what happened was, from my early trauma, as far back as I can remember, and from what my family have shared with me, you know, I was a pawn, basically. I was put between two adults that were battling, and I was in an early court battle, you know, for custody, and I was being pushed and shoved all over the place, emotionally tortured. Mm-hmm. Although I don't remember it then, but it does explain a lot of things that followed as I went through my 3 to 5, 5 to 7, 7 to 10 in that early, you know, the early life. Mm-hmm. So it's just really something for me to, I think for anyone that experiences early childhood trauma, you know, it stays with you. Here I'm coming up, I'm going to be 61 in May, and to be dealing with a lot of stuff emotionally that I was, you know, been thinking, you know, that I've been thinking of and been going over in my head over and over for the past decade, if not more, you know, it came to a halt. It stopped me in my tracks to where it stopped me from doing a lot of things and living happy.
Yeah.
Mental illness for me.
I mean, we see it constantly. I mean, you know, Flint does a Wednesday night support group with families to support those that, you know, have a suffering addict. And I mean, you know, and even you and I, we've acknowledged those traumatic things.
Sure.
That, you know, either they intentional, someone evil doing, or things that, like in your case, was necessary because you had to have surgery. Right. Like right after you were born, you were whipped into surgery. Yep. And, you know, those things stick.
Yeah, they stick. But I, you know, it's like, Richard, so, you know, I had a surgery a year from the time I was born to the time I was 13. I had four more in 1976. And I think I've almost lost count. I think I've had like 25 more since then. Wow. Just not on that. But I mean, a lot of them was on that particular issue. But I've had open heart surgeries. I've had a bunch of them. But that childhood trauma thing, you know, look, and I'm just speaking for me at this point. That was, I believe, a lot of there. And there were several reasons behind it. You know, the medications that I was on, you know, definitely affected my opioid receptors from day one. And so those have been jangled, muffled, whatever it is. You know, and looking back, you know, when I was like in my 20s and 30s, yeah, I knew that there was some issues there. But I'm going to say this, when I hit my final treatment center in 2001, somebody told me something, and this was at the Betty Ford Center. I'll never forget, a counselor looked at me and said, you know, there's a time when you're going to have to get over it.
Right.
Because it happened. Okay. You acknowledged it now. But this guy was a hard ass, right? I mean, he just looked at me and said, dude, he said, okay, it's there. Get over it now. There's nobody to blame anymore. You can't blame yourself. You can't blame your parents. You can't blame God. You can't blame anybody. It just happened. You happen to have that particular problem. And to me, that made total sense.
New Perceptions North, the premier drug and alcohol treatment and recovery center in Central California. A full continuum of medically supervised top quality care with programs for detox and patient residential treatment with dual diagnosis, intensive outpatient treatment, sober living support groups, and more. New Perceptions North provides adult men and women with the highest caliber of professional health care, treating each client with compassion and respect. In a safe, comfortable environment to begin the process of recovery, to proudly create and sustain a life without addiction. Call 559-978-1507 or visit newperceptionsnorth.com.
For me, after my last day in active addiction last night, the very last night that happened, I was moments away from taking my life. I grabbed a 38. I went outside. I looked down the street to my grandmother's house, and I was tired.
Yeah.
I was tired. Yeah. I knew I couldn't do it on my own. And again, you know, something happened that just this cool breeze blew over me, and I cried out in so many ways that I can't do this anymore. And I didn't want to live. And after that moment, you know, that is when everything just cleared out of my system. For whatever reason, I just felt human. I felt alive. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I dumped everything that I had, whatever meth I had left over. I was doing a custom inlay tile and stone job for someone. For meth and cash. I dumped all the beer and everything that I had to last that day. And I walked down to the payphone, and at that time, you know, I was married, and I told her, I said, I'm done.
Right.
I'm gonna come join my kids. I'm done. And to this day, I blame no one.
Right.
Of course, there were incidents that happened that other people were involved and things were, you know, been spit on, shot at, left for dead. I've been through all that. But I took full responsibility. And I even told myself that I was chosen to go through my addiction and through all the heartaches, heartbreaks, setbacks, in order for me to be the man that I am here today, right now. And for me to be able to share my story with others that are helping others, that is what defines me. That right there is something that I hold very, very dear to me.
You know, Richard, I'm going to say this, because you said something extremely important here. And this is really important for the younger generations behind us to think about. You know, so 20 years ago, you were what, 40, 41, basically, right? 20 years ago, you were 41. 20 years ago, I was 48. And I want you to think about the age that we got clean, as opposed to getting clean or trying to get clean at 18 or 20 or 25, because you and I had some maturity for the, again, not the real maturity, but we had some age behind us. We had some time behind us of being on this earth. And I see so many kids, both men and women today, because of how substances affect the brain, how it affects dopamine and serotonin and maturity levels and all those things, that when it starts coming down to it, these kids are still blaming whoever it is, mom and dad in particular, a teacher, a coach, a somebody. Because they haven't reached an age of maturity yet at 20 or 25 to go, you know what? I'm the one that f*** this up. It's all on me. I haven't heard a young person say that, and I can't tell you how long, but I certainly hear us guys at our ages saying it, you know. And now maybe it took us that 20 years from 41 or 48 to this point to do it. But no, I had a tendency to say that early on in my recovery. Again, I don't know why that just popped into my head, but I thought it's interesting because a lot of these kids, they're, even though they may be clean, like I say, they may be clean, but they're not sober. They're not living that good, sober, not, you know, productive life. Certainly not a perfect life, but they're just not mature enough yet, I think, to get to that point.
Well, I think that's the taking responsibility is the key to a long term sobriety. It's one of the pillars of it when we get asked, you know, I want a solution. Okay, take responsibility. And I think until you kind of get to that place, you're not going to have your mental, emotional, and spiritual growth and transformation. Mm-hmm. I think it's just key.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, your thoughts?
I'm just right now, I'm very open, and I speak the truth of how I feel. If I went around blaming and putting a book together with everybody that's harmed me, hurt me, belittled me, didn't believe in me, and I would be this terrorist of a mind, of a mouth, that I chose not to be. I don't know if that answers your question to my thoughts, but after hearing about owning, as far as like owning your responsibility, you put you in that position, you decided to continue your career in addiction. I wanted to make sure that I take full responsibility.
Sure, I get it.
That's where I'm at. And with the younger generation, I've had a few that have joined me, and I've mentored throughout the years on social media. And there's this one gentleman in Canada, in Ontario, I think it is. We've been in contact over 2.5 years. I've seen him at his worst. He reached out to me after finding me on social media. We've been friends ever since. I usually deal with people like our age, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, sometimes people that are even older. I've never really asked them where the blame comes from. Who do you blame? And that right there is interesting because, you know, I have a mentorship program, which is it's called the Six Stepping Stones, and it's basically a self-empowerment program. At the time of inception, you know, I wanted it to be a level of learning to love yourself, build yourself, your self-esteem, making sure that you're heard, put your voice out there, speak out, don't let anyone undermine anything you say or do, as long as you're doing the right thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I never even thought about that question upon intake when I was asking him. That would be a great, great way to do this. I would like to say that I'm going to do that from now on. I'm going to ask them, do you blame? Who do you blame? And I think that says so much, you know? And I want to say thank you for sharing that. And again, it just goes to show you learn something new every day. And I try to put that out there. You know, I've tried to work with people that knew everything. And I couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't do
None
it.
None of
I
us
couldn't.
Know everything, Richard.
I know that.
Right.
I know that.
I think I do, but I certainly don't. That's for sure.
And we have to uncover that why. If we can't identify that, why are you doing X, Y, and Z to change your physical and emotional state? And why can't you seem to have tools to handle something? I just don't think if we can't really get to that bottom of it, you know, it's going to be hard to help anyone or guide them in long-term sobriety. And a thing that, you know, you were talking about that age of maturity, you know, my dad and I actually talked about this the other day, you know, when your brain comes to maturation too, along with that 25, 26, a lot of those traumas come to maturation as well. Mm-hmm. And now you're having to deal with a whole new set of it. Cause my dad, it didn't really dawn on me. He's like, son, I was really good when you were little. Then when I hit about 26 or 27, all this came back up. And I was like, exactly. All this came back up, and you grew up in a lifestyle that no one had good coping skills, let alone maturity. I love my grandparents, but they were kind of when it came to parents. They were terrible parents. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense that there's not that acknowledgement of like, whoa, it's my life. It's my responsibility. I've got to take onus for my actions, especially in a society that says, go ahead, you're a victim. It's fine. No. Mm-hmm. You're a victim.
Yeah.
It's
okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting there. How do I say this? In case these guys are going to listen. I was somewhere last night when I was with a group of individuals, and I'm looking at a couple of them. And we're just going over some stuff. And I'm just looking at a couple of these guys and look, I deal with their parents on Wednesday nights. Okay. I mean, they've got a little bit of sobriety time under their belts, but my God, they just look pissed off. Okay. They just look pissed off. They are pissed off.
Right.
Okay. They're sitting there like, you know, woe is me kind of a thing. That's why it's so important in what I do working with parents is to get these parents to the point where they understand that every time they give that kid 10 bucks, every time they pay that kid's cell phone bill, every time they put a tank of gas in their car, all right, you are acknowledging that this kid is incapable of doing something on his own. And so there's part of that I don't even blame the kid. Okay, because they've been given everything under the sun. They don't know how to. I mean, I'd love to take some of these guys and just throw them out on the street for about 2 weeks. All right. And go with nothing. No phone, no money, no anything. And just go survive for 2 weeks. They can't do it. They can't do it. It's
interesting.
Maddening.
Interesting.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.
Interesting, because now that we're on that topic, I'm gonna share with you that same situation, because that scenario came upon me with my son. My son was in his active addiction. And after he was kicked out of the house, he had to live on the street, or he chose to live on the street because he wanted to do what he wanted to do. So every morning I would drive by and find him, bring him some food. I wouldn't give him any money, but bring him food. And on the way home from work, I would bring him some food. And I thought to myself, all the years that I shared with him, and he knew my story, he knew my background, he knew what I went through. It doesn't make a difference who you are. It doesn't make a difference what tax bracket you're in. It addiction hits everyone and anyone, anytime, any place, anywhere. It's in the way of how you deal with it. Some parents are the ones that never touched alcohol or drugs. And then there's some who have a long history with it that are in recovery or dabbled in it, and they understand it, and they, it just never was for them. But when I saw my son go down that road, and I witnessed the two or three times that he overdosed, twice at the hospital when they called me, and it's nothing that I wish upon anyone.
Oh, of course.
Friend, sister, brother, mother, father. And so I was asking myself the same thing, because I was always giving my kids everything I can possibly give them. Because in their early years, I wasn't around emotionally because I was out doing what I was doing.
Sure.
So when recovery came around, got back into what I was doing business-wise, money was not an issue. I showered my kids with everything because I felt like, because I can, I wanted to. And then I thought about it after a little bit, after, you know, I'm giving them everything they want. What am I getting in return in a way of them being good people? Stay off the dope. Don't drink. And finish school, do what you need to do. And it was a battle. And I'm going to say this, because this program here, and when I first heard about it, after Michelle told me about it, I started really looking into everything about this podcast and the program and what it stands for and what's behind it. This is a great opportunity to share, because you know, I have a father, you know, who's my biological father, who's doing life in prison. I was recently in touch with him. I think probably 6 months ago was the last time, maybe 5 months ago, I talked to him. We were in contact every 2 weeks. And I think it was last year there was a connection that I had, a friend in New York, in Brooklyn. And she was the creator and editor of Spotlight on Recovery. It's a magazine that's written by prison people that are incarcerated, and they get to have their stories and their voices heard. And I thought, man, this is great. And nice to meet you. I'm in the same way. I feel the same way. I want to help people. I want to have people share what they know and what they can do. She found him, found the prison he was at, gave me the number. I called the prison looking for my dad. Here I'm at 60 years old, emotionally just like going up and down, going,
sure,
who does that? And I reached him and I found him. He called me, and now I haven't heard from him, and that's like a little concerning to me. And then I look at my life, and I look at my older kids, who I no longer have a relationship with, because they don't want a relationship with me. And I thought to myself, you know, I didn't wait. I wanted to be the one to reach out to my dad to let him know that I don't blame you. I forgive you for everything that whatever was done. I don't blame you at all. I just wanted to say I love you. And I want an opportunity to get to know you, and we can live the rest of our life knowing each other and sharing moments with each other. I had to do that. I had to do that for us. It wasn't selfish for me. It was for both of us. So he understood before he passes on. I wanted him to know, at least for me, I don't feel the way others may think I should feel. You know, and I always thought to myself, man, maybe one day my kids will reach out to me. Hey, Dad, I would love to see you. I would love to spend some time with you.
Guess what, Richard?
You know?
Guess what, my friend? All right. You're doing what you need to be doing right now. Okay. And it's now in your kid's lap. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right? I agree. 100%.
Absolutely it is. Look, man, I mean, I went probably 4 years of my boys. Yeah, they would say hi, you know, that type of thing. But there was no real relationship there, okay? Because they were constantly waiting for that other shoe to drop, you know, because they'd seen it over and over and over again. And they were tired of hearing the I'm sorrys and I'm never going to do this again. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you know, and their mother living in hell, you know. And they wanted to see the action. And as time, as, and again, a lot of people don't understand this. Time's a pain in the ass. Okay. But it's got to go, it's going to go forward. It's not going to stop. It's not going to go backwards. It's going to go forward. That's the only way time can go. And sure. Right. And then after, and I don't know when it was, I really don't remember, but all of a sudden it's like, God, things got better. You know, things just got better. And then they got better. And then they got better. But that's not to right. But that's not to say that I didn't have, I'm still their dad. Okay. They're still my kids. They're still my pain in the ass kids, you know? So we still had, we had our little battles, but that's life, you know, that's life. And so the advice I give people is just, especially, you know, those in recovery, just keep doing what you're doing because there's no time frame here.
Oh no, absolutely. And I wanted to share that with you because I thought this might be the perfect time and place to do so.
Sure.
And absolutely. Yeah, this is what it's all about, you know. Yeah. And you know, for the longest time, and I'm going to share this. I think for the longest time, there was a lot of self. Trying to look inside and feel and try to heal what was ailing me. And it kept on going back to where, like, you know, I blame myself for so much. And some of the shame and guilt, some of the feelings like I don't belong, because I never really felt I belonged, you know? I had a stepfather who was an Irishman. And I carried the last name of an Irishman. And I would get teased so much because of my skin color. And how can you be this color with this last name? That went on forever. I didn't quite fit in with my race, my people,
right?
Because I didn't speak Spanish. And then I didn't quite fit in the community, in the area that I grew up in, where was surrounded by predominantly white. And so I was always never like accepted in a way.
Sure.
And that carried on through my life. That carried on through every decade, you know, through 20, I mean, shit, probably till 50, I felt the same. And it wasn't till recently I had to address issues before they destroyed me. And destroyed something very, very, very dear to me. And that was my relationship with my partner. It was so important to me that I needed to do something because I felt for the longest time I needed help. I was the one out there in the forefront, in the trenches, helping others come out of the darkness and helping others in recovery. That I completely forgot about me.
Sure.
I let me go. Oh, I'll be okay. I'm fine. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. No, I was not good. Yeah. And, you know, my partner put this sticky note, and I'm going to share this. It's blame and shame. And about it, I mean, I'm trying to overlook and over, just trying to step over some things because I feel I've passed that already. And I think I can clearly say that. I no longer feel ashamed of what could have or what happened to me in my early years and what I went through. Blame, I played the blame game for quite some time. Trying to fit in and never feeling good enough, or maybe you're better off without me, were my greatest comebacks. I was always wondering why I felt the way I did. I felt the sun on my shoulder, on my face. I could feel warm. It was a beautiful day, but yet I was tucked inside with a blanket over my head, not wanting to leave the house. You know, growth and change is so important. And if you cannot accept constructive criticism, if you cannot accept the things that you know that are wrong with you, and you fail to fix you, you are truly going to implode. And then you don't have you. Mm-hmm. Oh, nor will you have anyone around you. I'm right now, again, I'm just like walking down the street, walking around the corner to the 21 years, and I'm thinking to myself, in that 21 years, life has been such a game changer in many ways, at least the opportunities that fell into my lap. And I mean, fall into my lap is one thing, but being blessed and it is another thing. It was like, I would say probably 14 years ago, I would say, where I was picked up by a casting director that liked my look, said I would fit in this film that they were doing called Being American. And it was set in the Taliban, and I was part of the Taliban, and that was my first film. That went on for quite every year. I think I did another film, a full feature film, picked up my IMDb credit, and had a good friend, Gino Savano, who was someone who just took me under his wing and took me on set that every movie that he was on, you know, the director would send me a script because they knew they can do something with me. And that went on, and now I'm featured in two short films. One's already out, Schism, which is you can see on catch on YouTube, and the other one's in post-production, which has been sitting dormant for almost 2 years because I chose to sit on it for 2 years. I was exhausted after that last film. But in that same process, filming up in San Francisco is when someone else shared with me that, hey, you know, your look would be quite interesting. Have you ever thought of doing modeling? And I laughed in a way where, no, that's not what I do, and I'm not really comfortable with that. She took a picture of me, sent it to Europe. Here we are, 5 magazines, over 60 fashion model, crazy. Italy, Paris, France, Australia, two covers of an international men's fashion magazine. And it gave me a great opportunity because each and every bio in the magazine shares my recovery.
Nice.
That's what was so important to me, was that it shared my recovery, and I'm able to speak and share with the men and the men and women of color, the boys and girls of color, to let them know that you can do anything you set your mind to. Mm-hmm. Opportunity comes around once. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah. Right.
And like I mentioned from the very beginning, it's not everything that I do from my work as far as a career, from any film I've ever been in, from any magazine I've ever been in, or any up and coming shoot I'm going to be in. That does not define me. What defines me is how I can help others and how I help others. That's my true calling. And that right there, I feel truly blessed for.
Absolutely.
Sure. You bet. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's we had a conversation with Darren Prince not that long ago here on the podcast, and he spoke about that position is the caveat to carry forward what your true message is.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a matter but not who you are. Who you are is a person that represents and carries forward recovery, sobriety. Those are the things that you do that give you the vessel to do so. And I think, the power of it.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better. I love that.
All right, home run.
And I also think, though, too, that, you know, again, doing this for the last 15 years, you know, that people know when you're real. How do I put this?
The bullshit detector goes off.
The bullshit detector goes off, you know. And again, just kind of explain. I'm known as the hard ass here in the San Joaquin Valley. All right.
Hey.
I'm known as the hard ass. I'm not going to mince any words. I'm going to tell you exactly the way I feel, exactly the way I think about the situation.
Sure.
You know. And a lot of people respect that. And if they don't, guess what, guys? Then see ya. Okay. I mean, you don't want to listen to me. That's fine. You don't have to listen to me. But let me tell you something, because I've asked myself that question. Am I here? What reason am I here? Okay. I didn't want this on my resume, Richard. I didn't want drug addict on my resume. I didn't even want recovering drug addict on my resume. When I'm sitting in my last treatment center and everybody wants to be a drug counselor, I'm going, bullshit. That's the last thing I want to be. Get me out of here. Okay. Right. I mean, and then I waited 8 years before I started this organization.
Right.
So during those early years, it was like, okay, you know, do I want to do this? No, not really. And then somebody would call and say, hey, can you come talk here? Can you come speak here? Yeah, well, okay. You know, kind of a thing. And then all of a sudden it was like, it was just in front of me.
Mm.
It was just in front of me. And there was no turning back. There was no going, doing something else. I gave up my business that I had. And I started doing this. And I'll tell you what, there's nothing better. There's nothing better, okay, than watching some kid 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years later, walk through my door and go, hey, man, just wanted to say thank you because I'm still clean and sober.
That is so cool. That right there is the greatest, greatest respect and honor ever, is for someone to let you know what you've done for them in their sobriety.
Yep.
Now that right there, I'll take. And that right there feels so good, you know?
It does. It does. I got to tell you, it does. Yeah.
Well, and that's the beautiful thing about doing it too and putting it out there like you do, like we do, is we never know where it's going to land. And trying to control where it lands is so unimportant in it.
Right.
It's just the giving it away for free, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
But
absolutely.
Richard, if people want to find you, how can they do so? Connect with you? What's the easiest way?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram, which is Richard_Gallardo_Ozuna. And that goes as well as TikTok and Facebook. That's where you can find me. You can also go to YouTube and you can look up Richard Gallardo Ozuna Films. I was not a big fan of social media up until, you know, after March 2021. I think the end of the year is when social media came back into my life. And at that moment, I just felt like, hey, you know, if I'm going to be out there, I'm going to be honest and real. I never thought it was going to get this far, to be honest with you, with everything that's gone on. Because I was doing local stuff as a motivational speaker and mentoring, you know, sales reps in marketing rooms and speaking to people because they were in recovery. A lot of people that were working the rooms, they were in halfway homes. They were in recovery homes, but they had to have a job. So they go, they would go phone sale. Okay. So when they came, I had a great opportunity to talk to the people because they were in recovery. COVID hit. I was shut down. I couldn't speak anywhere. I wasn't on social media. I knew how to, you know, like something or, you know, whatever, but I wasn't out there doing anything. And then when the opportunity came, I was still uncomfortable, like talking like this. I wasn't too sure how it was going to land. I don't care where it landed, but I knew I wanted, I had a great, great outlook on the future. And I knew at one point it was going to be global. And that's where I'm at right now. I have mentored so many across the globe, from Lebanon, you name it, Australia, Switzerland, Italy, places, West Africa, Africa. I mean, you name it. And it, for people to say, because of the product that we put out, the content we put out, and the stories that I share, the horror stories, I share both the bad, I share all three, the bad, yeah, the good, and the ugly, yeah, because I want them to understand that I'm just like you.
Yeah.
I'm just like you.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm a second away from losing it all if I chose to go back into addiction, to go back into using. And what I wanted to share was, it's okay to share your thoughts on self-empowerment. It's okay to share your thoughts that you did not use a structured program.
Yeah, it is. Sure. I got no problem with that whatsoever. Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that I was open with everything because, you know, I was not quite accepted the way I thought I was going to be accepted when I was knocking on AA doors because I wanted to speak. But I understood, if I was not in AA, how can I speak and share the big book? And they were right. I didn't understand it, but I kept on knocking on doors and I was constantly rejected. Got on social media when a lot of groups found out that I was not AA affiliated, they dropped me. I decided, you know, it's only a chosen few in this vast pool of people in recovery in AA. I'm not going to let it get to me. But what I am going to do is I'm going to speak a little bit stronger and I'm going to welcome everybody in AA into what I'm doing. And everybody started messaging me. I'm in AA. I love your recovery. I love what you stand for. I love what you share. And here we are. I felt so much better opening my arms and letting people know that, you know what? I don't care how you recover, as long as you do recover.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And how dare anybody put you in a position questioning the way you recover?
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Pain Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to Pain, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.